This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. In 1971, my firefighter dad decided we were in a position to take the plunge, buy a little cottage up north. He found a place, one big room that served as living room, kitchen, and eating space. One bathroom, one bedroom. It was tucked alongside the Manistee River near Kalkaska. We had our cottage. That was such a big part of the Michigan dream for so many members of the middle class. But 43 years after my folks bought that Kalkaska cottage, things are very different in the up north cottage market. John Beck is an associate professor at the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University. Welcome, Professor.
Great to be on with you, Cynthia.
And Craig Hinkle is a broker owner at RE/MAX in Grayling. Good to have you with us, Craig.
Thank you, and I look forward to the conversation.
I actually want to start with you, Craig. Something tells me guys like Captain Milt Bruce were really the bread and butter for guys like you.
Absolutely. You mentioned the Manistee River, and that is a real classic trout fishing stream and some beautiful properties along that river. And I understand your father's dream, and it's a dream of a lot of people to have a spread on that river. So I understand how that's a dream, and I have a cabin on the Asabo River, so and it's only 6 miles from my house. But when I want to get away from it, that's where I go, and it is a special place.
Well, John Beck, when did that middle class push to have a place up north start?
Well, that I think that a lot of it is by what we call the golden era kind of labor relations in the United States. So post-World War II, you get this rise of income from about 1950 to the middle of the 70s, where income is really rising each year. People who traditionally, we think of as working class, truly became the working middle class. Many of them were able to send their children to college for the first time, a variety of other things. And cottages, I think, were a large part of that. That is, it was a place to escape the heat of the city and everything else and, get on those roads and drive up north.
And so, Craig, when did that big push that John referred to and during that golden era of labor relations, when did you see that start to change? What did you see there in the trenches of the up north real estate market?
Well, just to elaborate with John, I started in the business in 1979, so I've been in about 35 years. And when I started, the I'm going to call them clientele that John talked about, mm-hmm. They already had a foothold. The big three, those people already were planted, they had their place, and it continued to go. Right up until the recession, probably, and that started in our area late 2006 and 2007.
John, it seems like when you think of what Craig just referred to with the Great Recession, talk about a perfect storm. You have the housing market collapse, the auto companies laying off and cutting pay, the Great Recession really clobbered Michigan, people's 401ks went down the drain, and a lot of kids wound up moving out of state, so they weren't in a position to take over the cottage from mom and dad, or they were too financially strapped and couldn't keep up the taxes. Did I miss anything?
I think there's a number of things that this perfect storm gets a little more perfect, perhaps, because what you have in that period when Craig first started selling houses, you still had a lot of people with kind of the reaping the benefit of an earlier era, so high wages after kind of 3% on average kind of increases over 2.5 decades. Wages flatten out in the mid-70s. So you get that beginning to have an effect on people. You have far less people required to make automobiles, for example. And then two-tier wage agreements and other things that have a number of people coming in with lower wages than many of the people that they're working with. There was also the reality, and I think all of us who have children watch this happen, that rising college costs, more parents sending their kids to college, you had competing costs that frankly had a huge impact on your ability to buy property, for example, because it was diverted instead into rising college tuitions.
Boy, that does spell it all out, and I've seen that play out in our family. That is absolutely how it played out. If you've just joined us, we are talking about the cottage culture and what has happened over the years from what had been that big push for the Michigan middle class to get that little cottage up north. We're speaking with John Beck, who's a professor at the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University, and with Grayling broker owner, Remax and Grayling, Craig Hinkle. Craig, looking at all of this, this kind of perfect storm that John so well spelled out, how is this affecting the market today and your business today in Grayling?
It makes it very challenging because we have a whole bunch of folks that need to sell their property. They're not quite healed up from the recession, and we have just a huge inventory of properties in very little interest. I go back 10 years, and I'm going to pick the Manistee River and the Asabel River. There was a huge shortage. We would obtain a listing, we would simply call people. And I honestly remember selling properties sight unseen to buyers because they knew it was a good investment. They were getting double-digit returns of appreciations annually. And I would sell property sight unseen.
When was that, Craig?
When
was that happening?
Probably up to 2 years before the recession. So probably in the years 2001 to 2004. We were just going gangbusters, and people just knew, and the word was out that if you can acquire something on one of these trout streams, that it's a no-brainer, and it's going to go up in value. And it was a fun ride.
And today that ride is over, so you have a lot of inventory.
The ride is over. The inventory, our shelves are just full of inventory. It used to be Riverfront was our number one seller, and it's just not anymore. And you get all excited. You put up a cute log place on one of these trout streams. You're all proud of it. You get a good price on it. You post it on the internet. You do a mailing, and you get zero response. And it's just like, oh my goodness, what's going on here?
Wow. And you know, I gotta wonder. I'll just throw that out to whichever of you wants to address this. With the auto industry recovering, and we know people are not living in fear of layoffs as they once did. Is it that two-tier pay system that is keeping people from, or have they just been so burned by the Great Recession that they're afraid to take that plunge and own a second home?
Well, one thing that I would raise is that, Cindy, you raised something that's really important that your listeners really understand, which is that a lot of the demographic shift in terms of the makeup of the family, the kinds of things that family members do, let's posit two different families. Say in the early 1970s, you might have a third-generation auto worker who was working at Ford or Chrysler or GM, followed his father potentially or her father into the plant. They very well may have had a cottage up north that the family used as a refuge. Now, fast forward into the 1990s, it very well may be that all of the children of that 1970s auto worker live nowhere close to Michigan at all.
Yeah.
They're dispersed based on what they're doing in terms of their specific jobs. Their children are doing weekend soccer and other kinds of things during the summer. So much of the tie to a cottage that was a getaway means now that you're going to be missing things that fundamentally, you know, you've signed your children up for. They have more club and kind of camp opportunities than before. And two-income families means that you can't necessarily assume that someone's going to be at the cottage for six straight weeks because that individual doesn't work. You know, so that the big changes in families and activities, I think, is really put a strong nail into the coffin of the usability of a family cottage.
Craig, what do you see?
It's funny, John, that you brought that up because three times in the last month I've gone out to list recreational properties, and we always ask the sellers, you know, something wrong. The buyers are always going to say, you know, why is the seller have it on the market? Why are they selling? And it goes right back to what John said. These people want that are in their 60s and 70s, they want to go back to where their children are to watch their grandchildren participate in these summer events that are going on, the school events, the softball, the volleyball, all of these things the kids are so involved with, and it's pulling the parents back to return home to watch the grandchildren grow up, where 20, 30 years ago, that stuff wasn't available. They would come up to the cottage and spend the summer or a week or what have you. So that's an interesting point. I never thought about that until I just heard John. But three times in the last month, I've listed properties because people want to go be involved with the grandkids growing up and watch them in their sporting event.
The other major shift that I think that you have to always bear in mind is that our generation, the baby boom generation, is like this gigantic goat moving through the snake, okay?
Yes.
And it's those baby boomers that are sitting on top of a lot of that property. So that as they try to sell property, there's simply less people, you know, that demographic group is just dominating cottage ownership. And that a lot of their kids aren't making the same kind of money that their parents did. So the ability to simply turn a cottage over to your child, there might be problems in terms of you know, how much taxes you're going to be paying on that specific piece of property. I mean, there's been a huge shift, I think, that's having a great amount of effect on what Craig is looking at in terms of his market.
We absolutely saw that in our family because the family member to whom my parents left the cottage couldn't keep up the tax payments and had to sell and take a great big hit. So I'm sure that that has been just repeated and repeated. I just wondered to both of you, could you see a scenario where today's young people are tomorrow's middle-aged parents with a family where maybe a cottage does seem like a better idea the way it did to my dad after 23 years of marriage? Or has our lifestyle changed to the point, like you say, we've got the summer soccer leagues, we've got, you know, we want to see our kids doing all these things. Has that ship sailed?
Well, I can speak for myself. I have a cottage on the Asable River, and I have three boys. And I'm a very avid outdoorsman. I do all the fly fishing. We archery hunt. We do all kinds of hunting. My three boys have zero interest in going to the cabin and doing any of that. They're all in the technology era. You know, if we don't have Wi-Fi, if I can't do this, if I can't communicate, if I can't, it just, and I'm just speaking for myself, but I see it all the time. The people tell me that the children and grandchildren have just little interest in the boating or the outdoor activities might be. So, yes. Yeah.
One thing that I would raise, I think that Craig was absolutely on target in relation to Wi-Fi and everything else, is that a lot of people are using their cottages as simply doing work in a different place. So that flexibility based on Wi-Fi and other things up north has allowed people maybe to spend more time at some of their cottage properties than they would have in the past. But I think that the ability simply to spend time away in a different place will always be of great benefit to families and to individuals. And I think that cottages, the cachet of them will continue. The issue is whether or not the investment value that Craig was mentioning will continue to be upheld. I think that a lot of folks have thought of property as something that was, you know, frankly, their nest egg, whether it be the family home or the family cottage. And I think some of those days very well may have sailed.
Yeah.
Compared to the desire of people to actually get away.
Well, you both make me want to be up north in the woods right now. I'm going to tell you that. Great conversation as we look at kind of the shifting scene of Michigan's cottage on the lake lifestyle as we've been speaking with John Beck, associate professor at the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations at Michigan State University, and with Craig Hinkle, who's the broker owner of RE/MAX in Grayling. Thank you so much to both of you for speaking with us today.
You bet, Cindy.
And thank you.
That perfect storm that caused so many to put their cottages on the market does have an upside. If having a cottage is on your radar screen, you could be in luck. John Carr is a broker with Coldwell Banker in Harbor Springs. John, the area you serve has a few identities, I would suspect, from very upscale year-round homes to very upscale second homes to more modest cottages?
That's correct. We have a lot of very, very nice homes on the water, but an equal number of nice cottages that are have a view of the water, or maybe are on the inland a little bit, but have easy beach access.
How long have you been a broker?
Oh, long time. I think it's 27 years now.
Can you kind of just take us through the track that you've seen the housing prices taken for these, especially these second homes?
Since the the meltdown in 2008, every year there's a certain number of families that put their cottages on the market, for what the typical reasons. They're just not being used anymore. There's a death in the family. The kids don't come up and visit. And every year there's also a certain number of buyers. And usually there'd be a more or less equal number of buyers and sellers. After 2008, all bets are off. There are still those cottages coming on the market and very few buyers. So, simple economic supply and demand, the prices have plummeted. So there's a lot of affordable. Even the higher end properties have come down 30 or 40%, but the affordable ones, you can be on the water in a cottage for under say $300,000 to $400,000, or a nice view cottage with a view of Lake Michigan for under $200,000.
Hmm. Give me some of the rock bottom priced ones. What would you get for how little? I'm just kind of curious to get the scale from. Like you say, something $300,000 gets you on the lake. How low do they go?
I have a cottage listed for $179,000, two bedrooms, nice, cute cottage, nice view with lake access for $179,000. That's probably the best value out there.
And based on what you've seen in that kind of Harbor Springs, Petoskey area, is this about as low as you've ever seen?
Absolutely. The prices have never gone down in this area before. They always... I mean, you're really in the 90s, they were going up 30, 40, 50% a year.
You've probably got folks that are kind of almost trapped in those second homes, aren't they, where they almost can't afford to sell them at the prices the way they are.
Yeah, particularly, the old family cottages where, there's, three or four kids and a bunch of grandkids. The parents have passed away and the kids are trying to keep it. The kids are dispersed all throughout the United States. The taxes, for non-homestead are extremely high. If you have a property that's valued at $500,000, your taxes are $10,000, $15,000 a year. That's tough for these families to keep. So that's why some of these houses are so relatively reasonable now.
So bottom line, John Carr, why buy now?
You're never going to see prices this low again.
John Carr is a broker with Coldwell Banker in Harbor Springs, and appreciate your sharing your insights with us, John. Thank you so much for talking with us on Stateside.
My pleasure. You're welcome.
Today's Stateside was directed by Allie Billings. Our executive producer is Zoe Clark. Our engineer today was Bob Scon. Contributors are Mercedes Mejia, Emily Fox, Chris Hattelsey, Taylor Mattia, Omar Saadeh, Kayla Steinberg, Katie Suha, and Brianna Tinsley. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you for listening. We'll